Tehran rejects comments of the IAEA chief that claims there is a gap in the agency's knowledge about Iran's nuclear program. Armenia says deadly border clashes with Azerbaijan have subsided, but the situation remains tense following the worst fighting since the country's war 2 years ago. President Putin doubles down on his country's resolve to move its economy away from the U.S. dollar. This is World News. I'm Behruz Najafi. Welcome. Iran has rejected the IAEA chief's claim of a gap in the agency's knowledge about Iran's nuclear program. Spokesman of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran says Rafael Grossi's claims of a monitoring vacuum have no legal ground. Behruz Kamalvendi says Grossi was referring to the issue that's related to the 2015 deal and has been documented in the accord known as the JCPOA. He stressed that Iran would fulfill those commitments only if the deal is restored, sanctions are removed, and other parties return to their obligations. Kamalvendi added that Iran has already provided the IAEA with information and response about the three undeclared sites and even held talks to clarify any ambiguity. He urged the agency not to base its judgment on documents fabricated by the Israeli regime. The Iranian official noted that such an approach is in contrast with impartiality and professionalism. Kamalvendi was reacting to Grossi's statement to the IAEA Board of Governors. Armenia says the situation remains tense on several parts of its border with Azerbaijan despite a ceasefire that the two South Caucasus states have agreed on. Armenian Defense Minister says clashes have subsided, but Azerbaijan is still attempting to advance on its positions. It's also released a video allegedly showing Azerbaijani forces on Armenian territory. Russia, that brokered a ceasefire, has expressed concerns about the fragility of the truce. Deadly clashes erupted between Yerevan and Baku Monday night over disputed Nagorno-Karabakh area. Armenia says 50 of its soldiers have been killed in the latest flare-up. Azerbaijan has yet to release its casualty figures. It says it's fulfilled its objectives, though. In the meantime, reactions pouring in over new border clashes between Armenia and Azerbaijan, with Iran calling any new war totally unacceptable. President Ebrahim Raisi, in a phone call with Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan, said Tehran is closely monitoring the developments and that Yerevan and Baku should resolve their disputes through negotiations. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell also called for a ceasefire and urged both sides to return to the negotiating table. The French president said that he would raise the issue in the UN Security Council. France currently holds the council's presidency, but they said that they called for truce talks. Meantime, Turkey expressed support for Baku and demanded Yerevan to stop its provocations and focus on collaboration and peace negotiations. President of the Asia Institute, Emmanuel Pasrash, earlier told us about a possible role that Iran can play to put an end to the conflict.
Iran and Turkey can play. I mean, Turkey has, I think, not played such a positive role so far. Iran, in a way, has greater trust with Armenia and has, of course, the cultural ties with Azerbaijan that could make all the difference. The war before, what's really changed is in the Nagorno-Karabakh region, the previous conflict in the 1990s, and really until recently, Russia has been neutral, has tried to stay out. Whereas now, I think Russia really has no choice. If NATO is trying to muscle in and get control of oil and gas there, then these interests overwhelm all the smaller ones. And sadly, geopolitical conflicts can overwhelm the interests of the particular countries involved. That's why we really need a country, perhaps Iran, perhaps others, who are willing to try and step back from this escalating conflict between Russia and NATO and try and get back to talking about people, talking about long-term interests.
The Russian president believes that it's inevitable for the global economy to replace the U.S. dollar with other currencies and transactions. Vladimir Putin says that his country is doing well despite what he called external financial and technological aggression. He was referring to the sanctions that Western countries have imposed on Russia over the war in Ukraine. Putin says that Russia managed to stabilize inflation and prevent a sharp decline in the economy despite the bans. Moscow has pushed a de-dollarization drive over the past months. It's a reaction to the U.S. cutting off Russia's central bank from the dollar in its transactions. Russia says its forces have launched massive attacks on all front lines in Ukraine, and that after Kiev said that the military had made huge gains in its counteroffensive in the country's southern and eastern regions.
Russian aerospace forces, rocket and artillery forces are carrying out massive strikes on units of the Ukrainian armed forces in all operational directions.
The Russian Defense Ministry says its forces have carried out high-precision strikes on Ukrainian positions in the east. On the other side, Kiev says it aims to liberate all its territories after retaking dozens of towns from Russian forces. President Zelensky has called on the West to speed up weapons deliveries to back up its counteroffensive. Meantime, Moscow accuses the Ukrainian army of abusing and torturing civilians in the territories it's recaptured. The Kremlin spokesman says that there is still no discussion on a nationwide mobilization to bolster the operation in Ukraine following some recent setbacks. The German economy minister says the country is at risk of falling into recession next year as inflation is growing and firms are on the verge of bankruptcy. Robert Habeck says that German consumers and businesses are currently under immense pressure due to rising energy prices. He says the country is planning market reform to tackle potential threats. He was referring to a recent decision by the government to impose the levy dubbed a coincidental profit tax on energy firms. That'll supposedly shield consumers from higher costs. Energy prices have been skyrocketing in Germany and other European countries due to an energy row with Russia. Europe's economy is heavily reliant on Russian energy, particularly gas. Moscow has suspended gas deliveries, citing repairs and blaming the Western sanctions over the war in Ukraine. European officials say that Russia is using energy as a weapon.
Life is not yet hectic in central Berlin on an end of summer Monday. As Berliners gradually return to work, for many it is difficult not to turn on to the energy issues afflicting the country. The recent announcement by Russia to halt gas deliveries to Germany via the key pipeline Nord Stream 1 for an indefinite period has sparked fears of power shortages next winter and fueled inflation.
Of course I'm worried. The energy crisis is a pressing issue for all Germans. We're moving back to coal-powered plants, and just some of our nuclear power plants are likely to be kept online. And the soaring price of energy, how could I not be worried?
Germany has been trying to reduce its natural gas usage by 20% to avoid an energy shortage this winter. Some large cities in the countries are limiting heating and turning off gas lights to save on natural gas. Germany has decided to replace all Russian energy imports, most notably natural gas, by as soon as the end of 2024. Moscow accounted for 55% of Berlin's gas imports in 2021, a level that declined to 26% by the end of June. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has so far met this gas challenge through a combination of measures, including diversified sources of LNG imports and subsidies.
Can Germany then completely avoid Russian gas? That's an important question. And that depends on several factors. The major factor is the ability of the states to provide LNG to Germany. And also the ability and the interest of Germany to subscribe contracts that are long-term contracts, 10-year contracts for LNG supply.
Meanwhile, German inflation hit almost 8% in August, and earlier this month, the Olaf Scholz government unveiled a new multi-billion euro relief package to help households cope with skyrocketing energy prices. On Monday, the IFO, Institute for Economic Research, predicted the German economy will fall into recession next year. IFO also warned that the first quarter of 2023 will be particularly rough for consumers, with inflation soaring to around 11%. Max Civili, Berlin.
Elsewhere in Europe, civil liberty groups slamming British police crackdown on anti-monarchy protesters during the ceremonies marking the death of Queen Elizabeth. The advocacy group Liberty says it's deeply concerned by the powers given to the police to curb acts of protests. The Global Majority versus Campaign has also condemned what it calls centuries of colonial injustice and genocide in the name of the British Crown. Now, others are saying that calling for abolition of monarchy is not a crime, and that after arrests of several anti-monarchy ralliers as royals were attending rituals, including the one in Edinburgh. The main anti-monarchy group, Republic, also said that support for ending the institution and debating its relevance in the UK has grown since the death of the Queen on Thursday. Political analyst Mohsen Abbas has given us his perspective on the British police response to the anti-monarchy protests.
Even people kind of benign as protesters against the monarchy are being pulled up on the streets. And of course, this is indicative of where a lot of the direction of Western actual democracy, so-called democracies, are. They're basically going through a transition where a lot of the old rights just won't be there. I mean, they're being eroded slowly but steadily. It'll be very interesting to see how King Charles III deals with any such matters. They do raise the fact that through the Republic, who you quoted earlier, they often raise the fact that the monarchy actually costs Britain around £345 million a year. Their well-wishers would argue that the royal family also attracts tourists and is part of a tourist industry, which also gives Britain something.
On a related note, more Commonwealth countries are asking whether they should keep or ditch the Queen's successor as their head of state. New Zealand's Prime Minister says that she backs the idea of shifting the country to a republic, adding that this is something that will ultimately take place. Jacinda Ardern, however, says the transition would take time. Her Australian counterpart, Anthony Albanese, has not ruled out a referendum on a republic if he is re-elected in 2025. His government also says it's considering replacing the image of Queen Elizabeth on banknotes with Australian figures.
The priority for us is ensuring a smooth transition of the coins. As I understand it, the decision to include the Queen's face in the $5 note was about her personally rather than about her status as a monarch. So that transition isn't automatic. We'll have a sensible conversation within government and make an appropriate announcement in due course.
Apart from New Zealand, Australia, calls to ditch the British monarchy are also growing in other Commonwealth nations. Antigua and Barbuda says the island country will hold a referendum on transitioning to a republic in 3 years. Jamaica has also said it's considering independence. The Islamic Republic of Iran shipping line says the volume of its transit consignments has increased significantly over the past few months. According to the IRISL, it transported 27,500 containers through the International North-South Transport Corridor in March and June. The containers were loaded with some 340,000 tons of goods. According to the shipping lines, Russia and members of the Commonwealth of Independent States were the main destinations for the transit of commodities. The number of transit routes in the North-South Short Corridor has increased from 2 lines to 14 in the past 2 months. The government of President Ebrahim Raisi has expanded ties with countries worldwide, including Iran's neighbors, in order to boost trade and diplomatic ties. Israel has launched a massive campaign of arrests in the occupied West Bank, detaining dozens of Palestinians since Sunday. The arrests were made during raids in the cities of Jenin and Al-Khalil. Mona Kandil has more.
As part of Israel's months-long so-called Operation Break the Wave, regime forces have arrested dozens of Palestinians during raids across the occupied West Bank since Sunday. This time, the regime intensified its arrest campaign in the cities of Jenin and Al-Khalil. Israeli military issued a statement saying those who were detained are terrorist suspects. The regime conducts night raids in response to a series of anti-Israel operations that led to the killing of 19 Israeli soldiers and settlers earlier this year.
Whatever the Israeli military names its operations, these raids by the Israeli forces as well as by the settlers are an open war against the Palestinian people. The raids are an attempt to break the Palestinians' will to force them to abandon all forms of resistance and to stop fighting for their freedom.
The arrest campaign comes amid aggressive policies practiced by the Israeli prison authorities against thousands of Palestinian prisoners languishing behind Israeli bars. Cancer-stricken prisoner Nasser Abu Hamid, the leader of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades in Ramallah, is in a life-threatening health condition after he fell into a coma. The Palestinian Prisoner Society has warned Abu Hamid is fighting for his life as the Israeli prison service continues to refuse to provide him with necessary medical care. Abu Hamid has been in jail since 2002, serving a life sentence.
We call on all Palestinian groups to mobilize people and hold rallies to express their anger and rejection of the Israeli criminal policies that have led to the deaths of many of Palestinian prisoners. Nasser Abu Hamid is a national hero and a symbol for the Palestinian people. He is literally battling for his life due to his worsening health condition.
According to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, 231 prisoners have died in Israeli jails since 1967. So on the one hand, detention of Palestinians is on the rise, and on the other hand, torturing and denying prisoners basic human rights is also on the rise. Israel claims these policies are meant to mow the lawn, prevent any forms of resistance, but for Palestinians, these illegal policies are part of Tel Aviv's perpetual war against them. Mona Qandil, Occupy Ramallah.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
Arba'in in the Islamic culture. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. 40 days after the heartrending tragedy of Ashura and martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his 72 companions, the caravan of the captives of this great event returned to Karbala. This caravan was mainly formed of the women and children who had lost their dear ones in the greatest epic of history. The caravan had endured humiliation, hunger, thirst, and various kinds of calamities during captivity in the hands of godless hordes of Yazid, the libertine son of the rebel Muawiyah. This caravan was led by Imam Hussein's infallible son and successor, Imam Zainul Abidin, and his sister, Lady Zainab, peace upon them. The 40th day after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein has been called Arba'in. Every year, the followers and lovers of Ahl al-Bayt of Prophet hold mourning ceremonies to commemorate Hussein's unmatched move. But the most important and most glorious ceremony, undoubtedly, is the history-making march, which starts from a few days before Arba'in, with tens of millions of lovers who go on foot tens for tens of kilometers and even hundreds of kilometers toward Karbala. The magnet of Imam Hussein absorbs every loving heart from every country and continent. Most of the foreign pilgrims come to the holy city of Najaf and start their march from Najaf to Karbala. Is a mysterious number. According to the Noble Quran and the Islamic narrations, it can be understood that 40 is the symbol of completion and maturity. Ayah 142 of Surah A'raf reads, "And we made an appointment with Moses for 30 nights, and we completed them with 10. Thus, the trust of his Lord was completed in 40 nights." In this ayah, God says that a 40-day period was necessary to send the Torah to Moses. Moreover, when his people didn't follow his order to enter Beitul Muqaddas city, they were doomed to wander for 40 years to realize their sin and to repent. Anyway, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny too, was given his mission of prophethood at the age of 40. He says in a hadith, "If a person purifies himself for God for 40 days, God will make the springs of wisdom flow from his heart to his tongue." This beautiful statement is an important guideline for those who try to reach spiritual degrees through sincerity and purity of deeds. As it was said, Arba'in is the day of grief and mourning for the lovers of Ahl al-Bayt and pilgrimage of Imam Hussein's holy mausoleum in Karbala. This pilgrimage is to commemorate the sacrifices of Imam Hussein and his companions and to revive their luminous path, which is the path of fighting injustice and corruption everywhere and every time. The sixth infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, says, "Anyone who wants to be beside the Prophet, Ali and Fatima, should not give up Imam Hussein's pilgrimage."
Thank you.
Interestingly, marking the 40th day of martyrdom has been recommended only for Imam Hussein, peace upon him. No doubt, there is a reason and wisdom behind this. The most important reason is that Imam Hussein's historical move made Islam rise from its ashes and exposed the depth of corruption of the Umayyad ruling system. This has been mentioned clearly in various parts of ziyarats, or standard texts of salutation for Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, says, O God, Hussein ibn Ali advised, preached, admonished, wrote letters and ordered, but there was no effect. So, when he saw that there was no choice, he needed only blood, and he sacrificed his blood in the way of God. Sheikh Tusi, one of the greatest scholars of the early Islamic centuries, refers to a hadith from Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, where the Imam has said that after Ashura, a sky carried for Hussein for 40 days. The earth cried for 40 days with blackness and bleakness. The sun cried for 40 days through eclipse, and the angels cried for 40 days. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says, basically, the importance of Arba'in is that on this day, the memory of Hussein's movement was eternalized through the divine prudence of the Prophet's progeny, and this measure was founded. If the survivors of martyrs and the main owners do not make effort in various events, like that of Hussein ibn Ali's martyrdom on Ashura, to keep the memory and heritage of martyrdom, the next generations will not make little use of achievement of martyrdom. The leader believes that during 40 days after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his loyal companions in Karbala, Imam Sajjad, Lady Zainab, and other members of the Imam's family transmitted the lofty messages of this great move to the people. Had this not happened, the sacrifices and efforts of martyrs would not have impacted the people and next generations.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is the minbar you are listening to. May Allah accept your mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Today we invite you to listen to an English lecture by Brother Amin Rastani.
Because Imam Hussein did everything for Allah, Allah will do everything for Imam Hussein. So I'll just share with you two hadiths, and so you can tell what's going on. It says that the first hadith says, "An Allah awad al Hussein min qatlihi arba khisal." Allah traded with Imam Hussein because of his death and the way he was killed. He traded with him four things. In other words, he paid him four things. Yes, that's not a good word to use, but he rewarded him with four things. Now, these four things, they might not even have to do with Imam Hussein himself. They might have to do with the maqam and the mahmuda that Allah gave Imam Hussein. that praiseworthy rank, that rank that everyone else looks at, they're like, man, this is so beautiful, because it affects all of us. Like, Imam Hussein himself is good to go. But the thing is that through Hussein, alayhi salam, a lot is going to happen. It says here, number one, Allah gave him, جَعَلَ الشِّفَاء فِي تُرْبَتِهِ. Allah put shifa in his turba, the dust of his grave. And then some people might ask, well, we don't have access to his grave these days. Correct? That's where the scholars say, look, just take dust from Karbala. Any part of Karbala. إِجَابَةَ الدُّعَاء تَحْتَ قُبَّتِهِ. Under his dome, the dua is accepted or answered. الْأَئِمَّةُ مِنْ ذُرِّيَّتِهِ. This one has to do with Imam Hussein. That the imams are from his progeny. And finally, لَا تُعَدُّ أَيَّامُ زَائِرِهِ مِنْ أَعْمَارِهِمْ. The days that people go for ziyarat of Imam Hussein, those days don't count as their part of their life. Like, Allah will make that up to them. Okay, this person, it took him 16 days to go come back for ziyarah. 16 days, we'll add. Or if not more. But these are things that Allah, these are incentives Allah will use. What? The dua is answered. That the shifa is in his turba. And that the ziyarat is so great. That's one hadith. Trust me, if Allah hadn't sprinkled his little magical dust on anything that has to do with Imam Hussein alayhi salam, it wouldn't have gotten this big. Allah's will is there. Or look at this hadith. It says that the person asked Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, "Man ata qabr al-Husayn ma lahu min al-ajri wa-thawab." This person, he's like, let's get to the point here. Let's cut to the chase. What thawab and ajr and reward does a person have who goes to the grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam? He said, "Ya Shu'aib, no one will pray or ask Allah for something next to him, except that Allah will give it to them, either there right away or later." Okay. He says, "Zidni, give me more. I want more than that." And so the imam, he says, "Look, let me make it easy for you. أَيْسَرُ مَا يُقَالَ. Let me tell you the minimum. You can figure out the rest. The minimum for the zair of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is that everything's forgiven, so start anew. As if you're born again. Like, we have this in Hajj too, correct? But remember, I said this last night. With the Hajj, those are stones there that are in the Kaaba. Yes, that have made up this Kaaba. But Allah has blessed that. Think about it. The Haram of Imam Hussein has Imam Hussein there as well. Yeah. Anyway, we're not comparing at all. Imam Hussein gave his life for the Kaaba. But there's a point I'm trying to make here. Alright, so that's number one. Number two, Ikhlas. Oof. This one is an important one. I will say this much, that to the amount that ikhlas we have, to that amount Allah will give barakah, in my opinion. Unless other things factor in, of course. This is a world of cause and effect we're living in. Sometimes people have done things with ikhlas, but it doesn't work out because the zalimin get in the way of it. It doesn't spread, for whatever reason. But if the path is leveled enough for this car to move, the car will move because it's running on the gas of ikhlas. That's how I want to say it. Which will, really this applies to us today and all the work that we do for Islam today. I don't know if you're doing stuff in your university, if you're doing stuff in the center, if you're doing stuff at home, wherever it is. Ikhlas has to be there. I want to share some points here with you. Number one, Masjid Quba. Everyone's heard of Masjid Quba? If you haven't, you've heard of Masjid Dhirar. Because alhamdulillah, nowadays we are very quick to point fingers at each other and say, "You're Masjid Dhirar." I was traveling somewhere some time ago. It's just something that every community apparently is dealing with. I'll talk about that a little bit later, maybe. Masjid Quba, they say, is one of the first, if not the first masjid that was built by the Prophet when he entered Medina. It's on the outskirts of Medina. And they say he stayed there for 14 days until Imam Ali also arrived after that migration. Right? So the Prophet migrates with Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr wants to go into the city. The Prophet says, "No, I have to wait here for Ali to come." So Ali makes his way after those days pass. And so the Prophet in that time, they make a small little masjid, humble masjid, which later is expanded. And it's very interesting. You read the story. It says the Prophet put the stones himself. They're like, "This is so beautiful, man. If the Wahhabis just don't destroy the heritage, inshallah, they can't destroy the masjids, but all the other heritage, unfortunately, almost all of it is gone." But you go there, you're like, "This is it." Like, this is where the Prophet stood. This is where he placed the stones and the foundation for Masjid Quba. Like, what more could you ask for? SubhanAllah. Anyway, so they're praying there. It's interesting. Let me say this on the side, because I looked into Wikipedia. The English Wikipedia said he stayed there for 14 days for Imam Ali to arrive. You look in the Arabic Wikipedia, it doesn't say Imam Ali, anything about Imam Ali. Whoa. I wonder who wrote that one. By the way, I don't use Wikipedia for my lectures. I'm just saying. Exposed. All right. So this Masjid Quba, it just shows, because when you contrast it with Masjid al-Dirar, yes, that Suratul Tawbah verses 107 and 108 speak about, you'll find that masjid was built without taqwa, without ikhlas. Did it remain? No, no one even knows where it is, what's going on with it. No, it might have turned into some, that might be where the toilets of Masjid Quba are right now. But back then, they built it, yes, to cause fitna, to cause division, to cause problems, to look out for the Muslims. But they called it a masjid, and they started trying to bring in people into that masjid. But the Quran very clearly said that وَالَّذِينَ اتَّخَذُوا مَسْجِدًا ضِرَارًا, as for those who took to a mosque for sabotage and for defiance and to cause division amongst the faithful and for the purpose of ambush, by who? By those who have fought Allah in the past and His Apostle in the past, they will surely swear, we desired nothing but good. They're lying. Don't believe them, the Quran says. Now, which brings me to this point here. I've noticed this a lot of places, and we have to be very careful about this. This idea of pointing fingers. Just the other day, someone messaged me from another state, and they forwarded me a message. And in that message, it's saying that, yeah, so-and-so is Muawiyah. No. That's not how things work. I don't care how much of a problem some people will have with each other. There are red lines, brothers. There are limits. Does this person believe in Allah? Yes. Believe in the Prophet, the Kaaba, the Qibla, the Quran, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, weeps for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, all these things, yes. Are they after what this verse is talking about? Diraran, irsadan, kufran, tafriqan. If these conditions apply to somebody, then you can say, okay, they're masjid dirar. This person is like Muawiyah. But no. Oh man, oh Allah, we seek refuge in you from reaching such a point that I will ever call another masjid, another place of worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But there has always been, Shaykh, there have always been masjid al-dirars out there, there have always been masjid qubas out there. Yeah, but who are you to identify? That's the problem now. We always think it's black and white. We're not ISIS. There's a lot of gray area, brothers and sisters. We all know the general rules of things, but we will have difference of opinion on applying those general universal rules that we have taken from Ahlul Bayt. How dare I point to any Imam Barga and say this is Masjid Dirar, unless it fulfills these conditions.
Oh, Hussein, you live forever in our hearts and in our minds. I swear to Allah and to my last breath, remember Hussein. Hussein forever in our hearts and in our minds. I swear to Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call the back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. As a reminder, we spoke about the events which led to Imam Khomeini's arrest in 1963 by the notorious organization SAVAK. As you know, we try to quote from Imam Khomeini's venerated wife, Lady Khadija Saghafi, who was truly a fellow combatant beside the Imam. This time, you will hear on the events after the Imam's arrest, particularly the historical uprising of June 5th, 1963. Stay with us, please. The news of Imam Khomeini's arrest was like a big blast in the country, as the people of Qom, Tehran and other cities poured to the streets to protest against the Pahlavi regime's move. The demonstrators chanted slogans like "Death to the Shah" and "Either Death or Khomeini." In the holy city of Qom, people swarmed around the Imam's house and chanted anti-regime slogans. The tyrannical regime, in order to intimidate the people, flew military planes over the city, but angry people became more persistent in their move and called for unconditional release of their great leader and source of emulation. The agents of the Shah, scared of the spread of anti-regime sentiments, opened fire and massacred hundreds of people. The news of Imam Khomeini's arrest caused people from all walks of life to demonstrate across the city. University students closed their classes and poured to the campuses in protest. Owners of different occupations in bazaar closed their shops and poured to the streets. Students spread their rallies to the streets and joined the people, demanding the Imam's immediate liberation. The regime security and police forces tried to control the city by cannons and tanks. In Tehran, too, hundreds of people were massacred by the bullets of the mercenaries of the Shah. In the evening of June 5th, 1963, Tehran was plunged in silence. Trucks were gathering the bodies of martyrs to take them to cemeteries. The whole city was full of soldiers to suppress any protest. The people in the small city of Pishva near Varamin in southeast of Tehran created a great epic as they heard the news of Imam Khomeini's arrest. These people, most of whom were farmers, started marching over 20 kilometers toward Tehran while they were wearing their shrouds as a sign of preparedness for death. They chanted slogans like, "Khomeini, Khomeini, you are the son of Hussein. Either death or Khomeini," and "Death to the Shah." Moreover, the people of regional villages joined the marchers and shaped great masses in Varamin. Thus, the people of Varamin also joined the demonstration marching toward Tehran. Almost at sunset, they faced the military squads of the tyrannical regime, Bagherabad village. Seeing the stiff resistance of the people, the military forces cruelly massacred thousands of innocent people and injured thousands of others. People in Qom had gathered around the imam's house. The imam's venerated wife, Lady Khadija Saghafi, relates, "The sound of either death or Khomeini and Khomeini, Khomeini, may God guard you, may your bloodthirsty enemy be dead," had filled our home. The sound came from the street, but it seemed to come from behind the door. Our home was the venue of ladies. They would come and faint. I would put their heads in my lap and restore their health with water and juice. They were the wives of the poor seminary students and classes who really loved the imam. Imam Khomeini's wife, referring to the taunting of a few women affiliated to the regime, continues, "But at the same time, some women would come and break our hearts with pungent remarks, yet we had decided to keep calm." Comparing the women who would faint with those who would taunt us was the comparison of poverty and courage with richness and compromise. Imam Khomeini's wife points to the horrible atmosphere of Qom and the regime's flying of military planes over the city on June 5th, saying, "On June 5th, the regime had ordered phantom planes to fly over Qom to intimidate people. Women and men in Qom had become scared of breaking the sonic wall in the city. It seemed that the planes would fly low when they reached our house. They would maneuver with queer speed over the city, and this would deteriorate the condition of most women in our house. So I and my daughters would give them juice. They had come to soothe us, but it was we who were soothing them." Lady Saghafi continues on the self-sacrifice and resistance of people in those days. "People went on a stiff strike and closed all shops for 15 days. At last, the government forced the people to open their jobs and shops through intimidation and burning some shops and demolishing big stores. Of course, upon my elder son Mustafa's opinion and permission, bakeries and butcheries opened for a few hours in the first days to meet people's needs. Fruits had gone bad in shops, but nobody would open. Honestly, people showed high self-sacrifice and resistance." She continues, "Near the sunset, there was a rumor of attacking our house at night to captivate women. This rumor made men think over replacing us. Mr. Ishraqi and Mustafa asked for replacement. I told them, 'Are you scared?' They said, 'We have heard so.' I said, 'It is false. I won't leave this house. I am ready for captivity but not escape.' I resisted, but Mustafa was anxious and angry. So I accepted unwillingly. We went to Mr. Ishraqi's house. God knows how it was hard for me, but I tolerated. We went and came back the day after to see that I was right."
Thank you. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with Friday prayer leaders from across the country in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on July 27, 2022.
Give people awareness and insight. These things that I have mentioned are also true for the upcoming Muharram sermons, and you should be able to see the results in the following Friday prayers. So, if what you're doing is successful, you should be able to see it in the people coming to the Friday prayers. If you notice that what you're doing was not effective in attracting a larger audience, there is something wrong with what you're doing. Find those flaws and fix them. We cannot say the reason for this lack of attention is that people have lost their beliefs and have become less religious. Some people say such things. It truly seems they are talking without having thought about what they're saying and are suggesting that the people have become less religious. No, that's not the case at all. They're not less religious. Just look at the Ghadir celebrations and the massive gatherings for the ceremonies and speeches during the months of Muharram and Safar. Who are the people who attend these ceremonies? They are our people. Look at the mourning ceremonies, the religious ceremonies, the Arba'in Wuk. Who are these people? These are our people. Our people's religion, their faith, their belief, not only have they not weakened, they have actually become stronger. However, the quality of my sermons or my prayers might not be good enough to attract these faithful people. This should not be mistaken for weakness in the people's beliefs.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Some people easily say these things. For instance, they say the people's beliefs have weakened. No, they have not weakened. I've seen the country before the revolution. Most of you have not. Our people are holding larger religious ceremonies now. They are making much larger financial contributions to the religious seminaries, and they are participating more actively in social and religious services. The people are present on the scene. We are the ones who need to remain on the scene with them. O Allah, by the blessed souls of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi and his progeny, help what we have said and heard to be for you and in your path. Bless us with sincerity and accept it from us. O Allah, help us to practice the things we preach. Unite the pure soul of our magnanimous Imam who opened this path for us and the blessed souls of the dear martyrs who strived and sacrificed their lives on this path with the pure souls of the first martyrs of Islam and the holy Imam. Bless all of us to join them. May Allah's greetings, mercy and blessings be upon you all.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.